turning First Coast immigrants into citizens. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you're staying dry as you head out this morning. A reminder, we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, more partisan infighting expected this week in Washington over immigration. But here in Jacksonville, well, one of the biggest Citizenship Day events in the country is about to take place. You can get on the line now with your thoughts on that. The number to join us, 549-2937. Then later, we've got to look ahead to Generation W and a big new partnership for the Women's Leadership Group, plus Cole Pepper, and a look at the Final Four with one big surprise. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, the latest on the immigration debate. President Donald Trump last week signed a massive omnibus spending bill that funded the government just hours before a potential shutdown. But before signing it, the president sent out a tweet saying he was considering a veto of the legislation over thorny immigration issues, things like funding for a border wall with Mexico and protection for the nation's group that are known as Dreamers. In recent days, the president tried to blame Democrats for the end of that DACA program. Now, back in September, Trump ended deferred action for childhood arrivals, which had allowed the children of some undocumented immigrants to stay in this country legally and obtain work permits. Negotiations to revive DACA, well, they have repeatedly failed in Congress. The program remains in limbo as we speak. But as that drama continues to play out in Washington, here in town, Florida Coastal School of Law is planning to host its 11th annual Citizenship Day. It's coming up on April 7th. Now, Citizenship Day is a collaborative effort among several local groups, and it gives this city, Jacksonville, one of the largest Citizenship Days in the country. They consistently assist more than 100 local immigrants in this community each year. So what's going to be happening with Citizenship Day? We'll hear with more about their thoughts on that and the immigration issue in general. We welcome Professor Erica Curran. She heads up the Immigration Clinic at Florida Coastal School of Law. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also here, Professor Kara Roberts, running the Citizenship Clinic at Florida Coastal. Good to see you, too.
Good to see you, too.
And here's our question to callers. What do you think is the solution to this country's deadlock over immigration issues? And what are your questions about Jacksonville's Citizenship Day? Give us a call right now. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJackson. We always welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page, too. Professor. I'm mashing up your name, your first name and your title. Professor Erica Curran. You've come on this program many times to talk about immigration issues. Before we talk about Citizenship Day in Jacksonville, first let me get your thoughts on the deal that was struck the other day in Washington. The government is funded, despite presidential threats to veto it over immigration issues. That didn't happen. As we go forward now, though, a lot of these big issues are still hanging out there. What are your thoughts about where we are with all of this right now?
Yeah, we need to act, and we need to act soon. This is definitely a huge problem for the DACA kids. We have those all over the city of Jacksonville at our universities, in our high schools, and at our law school. And so a failure to act on that is really a failure for all of us. We also, I think the border wall issue, I mean, it's most of the research shows that that is simply not the most effective way to control our borders.
What does the research say about it? You're clearly opposed to a border wall. Why?
I am, because I don't think it's the smartest way to control our borders. And you also have to look at the cause factors, why people are immigrating to the United States or trying to enter the United States without authorization, what's happening in our neighboring countries in Central America and Mexico, and what can we do to have better partnerships with those countries and make those countries safe for people to stay.
What would be a better solution in your view?
Well, I think we have to have effective enforcement in collaboration with effective immigration reform so we can have the right solutions for businesses to have the workers that they need, and also for immigrants who have been contributing members of our society to come out of the shadows and come forward.
And the Citizenship Day event will deal with a lot of that. Professor Kara Roberts, you run the Citizenship Clinic at Florida Coastal School of Law. Your colleague, Professor Curran, mentioned the DACA group. Thousands of DACA recipients here in Jacksonville and in Florida, their status is now in limbo.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
What is their status?
They are simply protected from deportation.
For now.
For now.
And we don't know what's going to happen with that, though.
Right.
And they don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And as much as we'd like to help them at Citizenship Day, that's not a group that we can specifically assist.
Who can you assist at this day?
Anybody who has a green card already. And so the requirements for citizenship are that, generally speaking, you have to have had your green card for 5 years, be of good moral character, have physical presence and continuous residence requirements.
And so when people come out to this, basically they're getting free legal help from the attorneys at the school to help them with their journey toward citizenship.
Yes, it's a collaborative effort. It's volunteer attorneys. It includes volunteer law students. Florida Coastal provides a huge amount of support that is just insane and so welcomed. And the students especially do an amazing job.
This is one of the biggest Citizenship Day events in America, correct?
Yeah, I think
of this type.
Of this type, because we provide actual legal counsel. So it's not a lot of the events just give people the forms and the support, but we have an attorney. Everyone who comes to the event will meet with an attorney. And we have to thank our local Jacksonville Bar Association and Jacksonville Area Legal Aid for providing and training and supporting those attorneys.
Right. You collaborate with a number of groups on
this.
Yes,
we also mail the applications, Melissa. We put them in the mail for them.
And is that welcomed, I guess?
It is. And sometimes that sometimes can make a difference between an application getting filed and not. You know, people have lives and they're busy lives. And our target is low-income population. And so they tend to have a lot more limited free time.
What are your questions about Citizenship Day in Jacksonville? It's coming up April 7th. What are your thoughts about the stalemate we're at over immigration in America? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Erica Curran, when people come to these clinics, what's the most common legal issue they need help with?
Yeah, for Citizenship Day, our focus is naturalization, finalizing that. A lot of times people are becoming citizens because they want to make sure that their children have protection. They also want to be able to bring other family members to the United States. So if they naturalize, they might be able to petition for another family member to immigrate. And they also want to vote. They want to participate in their society. And there are certain jobs that you can only get if you're a U.S. citizen.
Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts on President Trump? He signed the omnibus spending bill, but he threatened to veto it over these very issues that you deal with. Immigration, the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the border wall funding. This is, more than any other issue, he ran on immigration. And he appealed to Republican voters in particular on taking a much harder line stance on illegal immigration.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily know that that matches up with the perspective of the broader group of Americans. Over 65% of Americans support some type of relief for DACA recipients. And I think Congress needs to act. I mean, I definitely, obviously, the president can lead, but we definitely need our members of Congress to come up with some comprehensive immigration reform.
The biggest problem I've seen with any kind of proposals for immigration reform is that it's so heavily focused on enforcement, and it doesn't acknowledge the benefit side and the need to reform that. In accordance with, you know, humanitarian concerns, but also economic. And so if you are not addressing the needs of your economy, you're creating a system where fraud is the most appealing option. And so heavy enforcement just creates that situation where fraud is more appealing.
What would be an example of the type of reform on the other side of this equation that you're talking about?
Well, I think it has to be twofold. You have to have enforcement. That's absolutely necessary. But to ignore the benefit side, to ignore the needs of businesses and of families. And so people need to get back together. That keeps families more efficient, just generally
and
speaking,
with
expenses.
That's what opponents of what you're talking about call chain migration.
Right.
You see it more as family reunification.
It is. I don't see it any other way.
All right, let's go to some calls now. Citizenship Day is coming up April 7th in Jacksonville at Florida Coastal School of Law, one of the biggest such events of its kind in America, where the immigration experts and attorneys at the school will help dozens of local immigrants become citizens. What do you think about all this? 549-2937. Jenna is on the South Side and starts us off this Monday morning. Hey, Jenna, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
All right, thanks.
Good. My question, I'm just wondering if you could have your guests explain what the overall financial cost is to somebody who's trying to obtain their citizenship from beginning to end.
From beginning to end. That's a good clarification. Yeah. Thanks for that, Jenna. Professor
Curran.
Sure,
I'll put an answer off the air.
Thank you.
Yeah. So if a person already has lawful permanent residence, the cost to file an application for U.S. citizenship is $725 on today's date. But if a person is undocumented and doesn't yet have a green card, sometimes there really is no price to pay to legalize yourself. And I think that's often something that's misunderstood. A lot of people think undocumented immigrants simply haven't filed paperwork, but they may not have any way to legalize their status. But an application for lawful permanent residence, if you have a pathway to that, is over $1,000.
Okay. And to come to this clinic on the 7th, people need to bring a green card, optional state-issued ID, Social Security card, 3 years of tax returns. What else?
Right. Actually, we have what we prefer to screen as many people as possible. We will accept walk-ins on a limited basis as much as we can accommodate on April 7th. But this Wednesday, we have our last information session and screening session. So Wednesday, March 28th at 6:30 p.m. at Florida Coastal, it will be open to the public. So if anyone's interested in becoming a U.S. citizen, they can come to the law school for a free screening.
Do they have to come to that to attend Citizenship Day on April 7th?
No, they can come on April 7th. We prefer they come ahead of time. It's going to be a more effective event for them because we'll probably be able to finish everything on April 7th. For those who just come on April 7th without the pre-screen, we might have to have some follow-up.
And to attend, you need to be a 5-year permanent resident or a 3-year permanent resident who is married to a U.S. citizen. It can be tough to get data on this, but how many people in this area would you say fall into those categories?
So in our area, I think the largest population is eligible for citizenship but hasn't filed is the Hispanic community. We have a lot of members of our Spanish-speaking community that are nervous about taking the test because you actually have to take a test. So we estimate that there are several thousand folks in Jacksonville that could use our services. Won't be able to see all of them that day.
People shouldn't be afraid to get screened. You may think that you're not eligible, but there are certain exceptions that can apply if you've been here a lengthy period of time. The test doesn't mean that you have to have perfect English. It has to be good enough for the test. You have to have understandable English. You have to be able to legibly read and, read and write.
What are some of the questions on the test? Is it all about just understanding how our government works, how our Constitution works?
It has to do with the government, the Constitution, geography, history, but it's primarily history and civics. And so some of the questions are like for how many years does the president serve? When the president and the vice president can no longer serve, who serves as president? Some powers are reserved to the federal government and some are reserved to the states. Can you name some powers of the state or some powers of the federal government? But it's very focused on very general concepts about our government and how it functions.
You've got to study.
Yeah. And if you want to take the test, I do encourage all citizens of Jacksonville, go to www.uscis.gov. You can take the test. They have a practice
test. I think most Americans probably wouldn't do very well, sadly. But that's good to know. I may do that myself. Let's go to Jim in Riverside. Hi, Jim. You're on the radio. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I just wanted to say it sounds to me like new immigrants need more paperwork than some people need to become president. in any case, I just want to thank your guests for what they're doing for citizenship and for helping folks who want to access the American dream coming to Jacksonville. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And now this is something you're doing as a public service for free for the community, right?
Yes,
basically,
this event is free, and we have a lot of partners. It's also for the volunteers that come. It's oftentimes the first time they've interacted with other populations or immigrants in Jacksonville. We're such a large geographic city. Sometimes we don't know who our neighbors are. We also have a barbecue, and it's kind of fun. It's kind of a party.
Oh, people stay for the they come for the paperwork. They stay for the barbecue.
Absolutely,
is that how it goes? Okay, we'll go back to some calls on Citizenship Day and your thoughts on immigration in this country in just a moment. The number to join the show, 549-2937. A few tweets. Stansky Law tweets the show, always good to hear Erica Curran on First Coast Connect. Emily tweets us, considering this country only has modern immigration and citizenship laws because we wanted to keep out Chinese workers who came here to often die building our railroads, we all need to take a hard look at history. She's talking about a Chinese exclusion case from really the Gilded Age. It set a legal precedent that informs this fight over the travel ban that President Trump tried to institute and other things. I'm going to ask you your thoughts on that, Erica Coran.
Yeah, I mean, that's somewhat true. Our Constitution doesn't specifically address immigration, and so our immigration law is really formulated through a lot of discriminatory acts, and the Chinese Exclusion Act being one of them. We've definitely modernized since then, but I don't think we've come to where we need to be. So our immigration laws have been pretty stagnant for the past 20 years, and we have not addressed the changes that need to be made to meet our economic needs and to address the family reunification needs.
What would you say, though, to listeners out there, Professor Roberts, who really stand in solid opposition to efforts to reform the nation's immigration system? They want a hard line. They want a border wall. They want much stricter entry requirements. They want mass deportations. What about that constituency? And they might not necessarily appreciate the clinic you're running. What do you say to them?
I think that everyone is entitled to their opinion, and the majority of the people that I've spoken with who maintain that opinion tend to not have a lot of real experience with those populations that we serve. And their opinions are based on what they have learned about in the news and what they've read. I would encourage them to go out and actually meet some immigrants that they have made judgments about and get a better idea of the situations that they encounter and what the reality of it is. Because anybody can say anything on the news or in the paper. But when you get down to the actual story of the individual human beings, you get a better idea of what's really going on.
Share a story. If you can just think of one, someone you've worked with at this clinic.
Okay.
You don't have to give their name, but
I can't.
Yeah, I know. Right.
As much as I'd like to. All right. I'll share a story from last year. A student of mine chose a case to represent. And so I allow my students, if they want to provide full representation to clients in need. And it's not always somebody who, always has criminal issues and is worried about going to an interview. Frequently, it's somebody who just needs the support. And so as an attorney, it's your job to protect your client's rights. I also feel like as an attorney, we are counselors. And the degree that we are that is up to us as individuals. My student decided that this person needed help studying. He had applied 3 times before, studied every single time, was illiterate in his own language, grew up in a refugee camp, came here as an older teenager, went into high school.
From what country? Can you share that?
Yes, Liberia.
Okay.
And so he went to public school at the very tail end, somehow managed to finish, but, wasn't really able to read and write. And this hurt his chances for citizenship, met every requirement except reading and writing. She spent the entire process that he was waiting for his interview, about 7 months. She spent that whole time studying with him every week, just teaching him, giving him pointers how to read and how to write from scratch. And this man at his first interview passed his test after trying 4 times, after an officer is looking at him and going, I've seen you before. Trying to ease him down and make him think, just in case you don't pass, this is going to be okay. There's going to be another chance. And even he was, emotional about the fact that this man who had tried very hard, studied very hard, had a very hard life, and he really earned this, and that's what he wanted.
He's a citizen
he
now?
Is. He just became one last month.
What's he doing now?
He is working for Amazon.
At the fulfillment center?
He is.
Wow, how about that? All right, here's another tweet for you from Brian. What irritates me about this issue is the frequency of tax evasion. The phrase under the table can be one indication of the practice. And I think he's talking about, in particular, people that will employ undocumented immigrants and pay them under the table and not pay taxes on that labor.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a problem. We actually encourage, and I obviously in the clinic, we represent folks pre-citizenship stage very frequently. We have them pay their taxes. We encourage mm-hmm. them to go get the tax identification number and pay their taxes. And so the immigrants often are paying the taxes. It's just the employer. So that is a problem. Mm-hmm. And the enforcement really should be targeting employers.
Yeah, at the citizenship stage, we like to see the tax returns. And when we notice some issues, frequently it's not the client, the immigrant, who is aware that they're making some kind of error on a tax return. They're going to preparers. They're relying on friends. They're just doing what they think they're supposed to do. And when we notice errors and tell them, they're very interested in correcting it. And they're interested in, in doing it in accordance with the law when they are aware that it wasn't.
Right. What else, before we wrap this up, do people need to know to be part of this event? What else do you want everyone to come who's eligible?
Yeah, there are fee waivers and there are reduced fees. So if the $725 isn't in your budget, we have attorneys and law students available to help you to apply to not pay that fee.
And that's also why we need the tax returns.
Okay, and go to your website. It's fcsl.edu. Florida Coastal School of Law's Citizenship Day, the 11th annual, coming up April 7th on the Florida Coastal campus from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Ladies, thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Professor Erica Coran, Professor Carol Roberts, both with Florida Coastal School of Law. Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, Culpepper stops by with a big surprise for basketball fans as the Final Four is set. But up next, it's First Coast Success today as we profile real estate mogul Hayward Cantel. That's from our own Karen Bruni Mathis. Back in a moment.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. Get the latest news, event updates, and see what happens behind the scenes. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
You've seen him on the PBS NewsHour with Judy Woodruff. Now join news anchor Hari Srinivasan for an in-depth discussion Thursday, April 19th at the WJCT studios. VIP reception at 6 with a discussion at 7:30. Tickets for the event are $25. To purchase tickets and for more information, go to wjct.org/events.
The first thing you lose is vision.
Your heart speeds up, stomach muscles clench.
And you have what's called gray out. Then you go through blackout. Then you lose consciousness.
This week on Radiolab, out-of-body experiences. From fighter pilots to phantom limbs.
Some feel their arm is always clenched.
The nails dig into my palm.
Some feel like their hand is hot, that it's cold.
Sunday at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues. As part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Well, he's one of Jacksonville's prime movers when it comes to real estate. In this month's First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record sits down with Hayward Cantel, president of Cantrell Real Estate.
If you've worked in Jacksonville's real estate market the past 50 years, you've likely met Hayward Cantrell. Now president of Cantrell Real Estate, his first job in Jacksonville was with the legendary Charter Company. For his accomplishments the past five decades, the NAIOP Commercial Real Estate Development Association awarded him its Lifetime Achievement Award. Hayward Cantrell, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you.
For those who don't know about the Charter Company, tell us what it was about Charter that made it so special to the people who work there.
Charter was involved in many things, real estate being one of them. It got heavy into oil, which blew up the real estate portion of it. But in the real estate area where I worked, it was interesting that it was very growth-minded. Jim Winston ran the real estate part. He was executive vice president of the company. Raymond Mason was the president and chairman. But they grew from within, and they had a very aggressive growth and employment policy. And so the great majority of us back to the late 1960s now, we were very sales-oriented. We were all very similar in age. We were, most of us had advanced degrees. I have an MBA. And interestingly, to get a job, you had to take an industrial psychologist exam. Mel Reed was, if you know that name, was the one who pretty much did all the interviewing. It was an 8-hour exam. You didn't get a job offer without Mel Reed's recommendation. And so what happened was we all ended up with very similar personalities. We were very sales-oriented, all about the same age, same educational backgrounds. And it was almost like joining a fraternity. And it was a fun place to work, and we were all pretty hard workers and very aggressive in going about our business.
What have you enjoyed most about your career?
Probably the diversity. I have been in the mortgage banking business with lots of experience with income-producing properties. We go through recessions periodically, and the Barnett Winston Investment Trust, Barnett Mortgage Trust, and the Barnett Winston Company got hit pretty hard in the late 70s, foreclosed lots of loans. They made the decision for all of the income-producing property not to outsource completion of construction, property management, interior design of hotels. They put me in charge of all that. And so I learned firsthand managing. I had over 5,000 apartments and 8 hotels, and I've forgotten how many office buildings and shopping centers. But we got pretty good at that, and we started managing for other people. And I was managing for Chase Manhattan and for Citibank and others who across the country. And so from there, I went to buying property and developing property. The diversity of everything I have been given the opportunity to do, that's been pretty enjoyable and interesting.
Do you have any predictions on where the market's going now?
We haven't had a recession in quite a while, and so I predict that we will have one. Who knows when it's going to come? There are predictions all over the place, but the house sales seem to be holding up pretty well. I haven't really studied office vacancy, but that's part of the problem in downtown Jacksonville, is that we've always had a huge office vacancy. I don't know when the next recession will come, but it's on the horizon, I can promise you that.
And as you look around Jacksonville, what do you see happening with the city and the surrounding area? Where do you see the growth opportunities, and where might there not be growth opportunities?
Well, the path of development is south. A lot of that is due to the highways that are being developed in that direction. A lot of it has to do with St. Johns County schools and then the industrial areas to the north. So if you wanted to ask me where is the industrial growth, I would tell you the north. But if it's residential and population, it's to the south. You can't go very far east. It's pretty well built out, and we've got this body of water out there on our border. So there's not too many ways you can go. I guess you could go west, but there doesn't seem to be much happening in that direction.
What else would you like to share?
I think we've got an issue in downtown Jacksonville, and I don't see the city using its real estate professionals to help solve it. I do a lot of business throughout the southeast, and one of my prolific business is in Norfolk. I'm very familiar with real estate in downtown Norfolk. That city has committed itself to housing downtown, and they have a lot of it, and they're continuing to grow their housing. They're converting. The last I saw was the Bank of America Tower. They're converting it to rental apartments right as we speak. Other cities are doing that as well, but Jacksonville hasn't figured out how to get it done. And to my knowledge, they have not called on the real estate professional community to help solve the problem. They get land planners, other consultants, but the folks that have to make the numbers work, they're the ones who ought to be called upon. And I don't know how to organize it, but there's a lot of opportunity, I believe, in the downtown area compared to what I see with other cities. You know, Norfolk has a river that runs right through the middle of the city. It's got a beach the same distance as Jacksonville Beach is from our downtown. It's got a limited access expressway that leads to that beach. Halfway to the beach, there's a town center. It's a Navy town. They have a junior college downtown. All those things are so similar. However, they also have, in the middle of their city, a 1,200,000 square foot, three-story shopping mall anchored by Nordstrom's. They brought in the Wisconsin battleship as one of their tourist attractions. It's right in the middle of downtown. They've got things like that that somebody has taken the initiative to do. I've spoken to some of our city leaders about they need to go to Norfolk and find out what they did and how they are going about it.
Well, Hayward Cantrell, a 50-year veteran of the real estate industry, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
My pleasure.
The final four is set. But up next, Generation W forms a strategic partnership with APR Energy. We'll tell you about that too, right after this.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. Get the latest news, event updates, and see what happens behind the scenes. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Many people in Jacksonville never come in contact with those outside their core communities. WJCT is embarking on a journey called Beyond the Core to start a citywide conversation about what unites the people who call Duval County home and what makes our smaller communities unique. We might have an upcoming Beyond the Core listening event in your neighborhood. Check WJCTnews.org to find out.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, it's an exciting new partnership as Jacksonville-based APR Energy joins forces with the women's leadership organization, Generation W, forming a strategic alliance to educate, inspire, and connect women across this area and beyond. Here with more, Donna Orender, Executive Director of Generation W. Good to see you.
Hello, Melissa.
Also here, Chuck Ferry, President and Chief Operating Officer of APR Energy. Hey, Chuck.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
And I'm great, and it's good to have you on the show. So you are now aligning yourself with Generation W. What prompted this decision?
Well, I think first off, we're a global company that operates in lots of different places. We're based here in Jacksonville, and what we really wanted to do here was trying to strengthen our ties, not just here in Jacksonville, but more to the local community. So, my wife Angie recently met up with Donna and her organization. She brought that we had already worked some with Generation W, but I think we decided to strengthen our ties just because of the work that they do. We've got a lot of women in our company that I think really enjoy going to her events, and we can benefit from that. So we'd like to support it.
Right. Supporting more women rising in your company. Donna Orender, Generation W's big signature event is coming up on April 13th. So APR Energy will be supporting that, but not just that, other things too.
Yeah, it's the wonderful relationship about really speaking and living and working community commitment, which is a incredible relationship. Listen, they're an incredible company. They're a global company that has a heart in the communities in which they live and work. We are blessed that they are headquartered here and that they have this real commitment to not only action, but really thought leadership. Yeah. And so like, there's Chuck's amazing, Angie's amazing, John Campion's amazing, David Emanuel's amazing. There's just so many amazing people in that company that are committed to doing good work to elevate people's lives. And we are blessed, truly blessed, that they are partnering with all of the work that we do on behalf of so many.
Right. Supporting the big event on April 13th, your program for young girls and young women, Generation WOW, your dedicated day of service for the whole city, Generation Works. You've been doing so much with that. A new book you've written for girls called Wowsdom. That'll come out this year. So, Chuck, there are a lot of things going on with Donna's group that you're putting APR energy next to. That's exciting. And you know what? Let's talk a little bit about APR energy, because particularly in the last few years, you guys have been in the news. For example, after Hurricane Irma, when Puerto Rico is leveled, you go into places like that. This is just one of the things, it's my understanding, you do, and you restore the grid. You help people get power.
No, that's right. So just this in this last October, November timeframe, of course, we had two major Cat 5 hurricanes go through the Caribbean and hit U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico hard. We had earthquakes down in southern Mexico. And so at one point, the company was simultaneously putting in 14 turbines into five different power plants, two in Australia, two in Puerto Rico, another one down in southern Mexico, as well as USVI, all at the same time, less than 60 days. So it is very thrilling to be part of a company and get to lead that company, to be able to, solve, and bring people power very, very quickly. And we have a lot of great super men and women that help us do that. And so we're proud to be here in Jacksonville, but it's a very cool company to be part of.
Yeah. Right. And this is sort of, in a way, introducing APR Energy to a whole new audience in this community. Not everyone might realize they're right here in Jacksonville, Donna.
Without a doubt, I have no doubt that your phone will be ringing well up repeatedly after this interview, Chuck. But let me say this. This is an energy company, and it speaks to energizing people's lives, and that actually is also a connection. One of the lead things that they spoke to us about is, as you mentioned, our book Wowsdom is coming out. Wowsdom is about, it's a girl's guide to the positive and the possible. It believes in intergenerational connection. It's the wow, uniting of our wow with the wisdom of our women. And they took the lead in this program called Share the Wow. And they have purchased a bunch of books that they are going to be donating, and they're sending the word out, hey, join us in donating this energy, energizing girls' lives, that is so impactful, not only here in the state of Florida, mm-hmm. not only here in the United States, but actually this will be global.
You know, when you told me about this partnership, I thought it was so fitting, because when I think of Donna Orender, I think of energy. You're pure energy.
Yeah. I just stick my finger in some socket and it just goes, right?
So this makes sense on a number of levels. You know, Chuck Ferry, your company too, is so fascinating to me, because your founder, John Campion, he's a guy who used to be a roadie for big rock stars, and he would help power up big arena stage shows.
That's right.
And from there, he went on to form this company. It's such an interesting narrative.
It is a terrific story. Look, John came here as a very young man. He immigrated here from Ireland. So I think you were talking about immigration here earlier. So he's one of those guys. He came with nothing in his pocket. And he was a roadie and kind of invented this way to bring a lot of power to rock shows. And that has kind of translated now into this more, larger and robust company that does that. But we get a chance, I'll tell you about, we've got this great gal, her name is Libby Owen. Went here to UNF. She was one of our interns, and she was one of the key people that really helped us do what we did here recently in Puerto Rico. So she is just a terrific example of, I think, of a woman that is not only getting things done, but is a great leader for us. When we went down to Puerto Rico, she went down a few days after the hurricane. She stayed there. When I came back about a week later with John Campion to try and sort out how we were going to bring power down there, she was practically, operating there as the mayor.
She was instrumental to that. How many people did you help get powered back on down there? Do you have a number?
So we put in two different power plants, a total of about, almost 100 megawatts, one up in San Juan, another one down at a place called Yabucoa. And we probably brought power back to at least, 5 to 8 million people.
When we brought those
generators on. And since we turned them on, Libby helped get all that stuff done. They've been running at full power pretty much since. So,
with your program of Generation W, Donna, a big part of what you're doing is encouraging companies like APR Energy and others that are headquartered here to promote more women for leadership positions, just like that.
Without a doubt, we are so excited. We have not met Libby yet, but it's really led to other discussions in terms of women in leadership in tech and STEM. And APR is going to be working with us with our Generation WOW, our girl program, which Angie has been really involved with as well, to bring the kind of STEM leadership and knowledge and expertise at the APR company to our teen girls in this city. Just think about how wonderful that is, not only in this city, but as WOW broadens to other cities as well. So that kind of connectivity and conversation with real role models like Libby is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny to think about, but I can't believe it's come around again already. Your big Generation W event is coming up on April 13th. It's gotten bigger every year.
It has gotten what we hope to be more as we look to grow impact every year. We grow to grow influence every year. We look to change women's and men's lives. We look to make a difference in communities every year. And if that is what the feedback is, then we know that we're doing our job, and mm-hmm. we take that trust incredibly seriously into heart. And so we are working off to make sure that we can deliver for companies like APR who have trusted us to deliver with them to make a difference.
Let me ask you, too, while we have a couple of minutes left to discuss this, Chuck, we talked a lot about Puerto Rico. What are some of the other big trends and challenges you're seeing in the energy sector right now? I've got you here. I'm curious to ask you that.
Yeah, I think one of the big things, and John Campion will talk about it a lot, is that, the way that we deliver power, not only in the United States, but really around the world, is changing a little bit. So with the onset of renewables, wind and solar, battery power and things like that, what that has actually done is, in effect, that it actually has effect of almost destabilizing grids, because you've got lots of different types of power coming on and off grids. And so one of the things that APR Energy has been looking at doing is, with our turbine technology and partnerships with General Electric, is how we, bring, that technology and actually put it onto, various different grids to help stabilize that, which in effect, as we go forward, would allow you to, stabilize and be able to operate with those renewables a lot more efficiently. Uh-huh. So I think that's one of the things, probably one of the big things that we're probably going to see here.
So a lot of change, more disruption, but more opportunity, yeah. It sounds like, too.
Well, certainly. But it's I think the energy, business has to adapt and integrate all these different types of power, but still provide it such that it's delivered, smoothly, and people don't see that disruption.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You'll see APR Energy prominently featured coming up at Generation W's signature event Friday, April 13th on the UNF campus. Go to genwnow.com to find out more and to register. Donna Orender, always great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Always, always, Melissa. Thank you.
And Chuck Ferry, president and CEO of the COO, rather, of the Jacksonville-based APR Energy. Chuck, good to be with you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having
me.
In
a moment, Cole Pepper as the Final Four is set with one big surprise. That's next.
Thank you so much.
Not alone. A day of info and inspiration open to the public at Caregiver Expo with special guest Donovan Darius. Saturday, April 14th from 9 to 3 at Everbank Field. Register at mycaregiverconnection.org.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Distracted driving is deadly, and it's not just teen drivers. Adults do it too, and there are millions more adults than teens. Arrive alive. Stop distracted driving. More at waynehogan.law.
The world's two biggest economies seem ready to duke it out over trade. China is planning big tariffs on American goods like fruit, pork, wine, and steel. Experts say neither side will win, but who will feel the pain first? Maybe the president's political base? Or could his tariffs actually help? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, should corporations be regarded as people in the eyes of the law? We talk with Adam Winkler, whose book, We the Corporations, reviews business efforts in the courts to establish corporate personhood going back 200 years. He says the Citizens United decision is best seen as the latest manifestation of a long-overlooked corporate rights movement. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Community hospice and palliative care. Are you a caregiver? You're not alone. A day of info and inspiration open to the public at Caregiver Expo with special guest Donovan Darius, Saturday, April 14th from 9 to 3 at Everbank Field. Register at mycaregiverconnection.org.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. The Move Over Law protects police, fire, EMS, utility, and sanitation personnel and requires drivers to move over and slow down when approaching their vehicles. More at waynehogan.law.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, the final four is set, but with one big surprise.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Sorry, Seminoles fans, Florida State fell just a little short. Culpepper's here now with a look at the Final Four and the rest of the week's sports. Hey, Cole.
Hey, Melissa. Let's start with Florida State here, and then we'll work our way toward the rest of the Final Four. FSU beaten by Michigan on Saturday. An unusual end to the game in the Elite Eight. Michigan was up four with 15 seconds to play, and Florida State decided not to foul and send Michigan to the line. Pretty much every game I've ever seen ever is a four-point game with 15 seconds. They're fouling and hoping that the opposite, the opposing team misses free throws and give yourselves a chance. Now, no chance, no way to tell for sure whether it would or would not have created an opportunity for FSU to win, but Leonard Hamilton decided to do otherwise, and it was followed by an odd post-game interview on CBS with FSU head coach Leonard Hamilton answering the question.
Do you think that the game came down to the final seconds of the game?
I'm asking you, though, why that decision in the final seconds of the game?
The game was over.
You didn't think your guys could get back in it, put them on the line if they miss those shots?
I mean, but 15 seconds, what were we down?
Put them on the line, they miss a few shots. Coach, a four-point ball game, it's a question that the guys were asking at the end of our game. That's all I'm asking. It didn't come down to that in your mind.
I thought they did a great job.
All right, so that was Dana Jacobson, by the way, doing a very good job maintaining her poise and asking the question. That was Saturday. Yesterday, then, Hamilton put out this statement. In the minutes immediately following, I was interviewed by Dana Jacobson of CBS. I did not initially respond to her questions as I would have liked, and she was doing her job in asking them. The combination of the raw emotion of the athletics and the critical analysis of it make for compelling television, but not always for level-headed interviews with the participants who must manage both. I wish I could have done better. Good response. You just wonder why a veteran coach like that would be so thrown off guard by questions like that at the end of the game. Obviously, he was disappointed.
He was obviously thrown. Yeah.
As FSU was trying to get to just to their second ever Final Four, but they fall short. So now here we are looking at the Final Four. Michigan is one of those teams in, not as predicted here on this show 2 weeks ago.
Yes, it was not a cold cut.
Loyola Chicago beat K-State, just the fourth 11 seed to make it to the Final Four, the lowest seed ever to make it this far.
And how about that Sister Jean at Loyola?
A 98-year-old.
An internet star.
She is amazing, and if you don't have somebody to root for, I would say Loyola Chicago, probably you're rooting for the underdog.
Absolutely.
And one of the sweetest basketball fans you've ever seen.
Oh, it's the greatest. Yeah.
Also not predicted on this show 2 weeks ago. However, on the other side of the bracket, Melissa, Villanova and Kansas. Villanova topped Texas Tech to make their second Final Four in 3 years, and Kansas beat Duke in overtime. So I've got that side of the bracket all right.
You got that going for you.
And there's a Jacksonville connection with Kansas. Potter's House alum Yudoka Azubuike will be the Jacksonville connection in the Final Four in San Antonio, where, by the way, Kansas won a national championship the last time the Final Four was played there 10 years ago. In 2008. So the early game is Loyola against Michigan, 6:09 on Saturday. The late game will be Kansas against Villanova. And interestingly, all four teams in the Final Four have won national championships in their past, including Loyola, that won back in 1963.
How about that? All right, so that's going to be a big weekend of basketball. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about the date for the Players' Championship return. They've been doing it in May for a while, but now going back to March.
Yeah, this will be the last year they play in May. Then in 2019, it's going to be in March. And while they haven't officially announced it, we can do some sleuthing here and find that with some of the other announcements of when some of the other March tournaments will be played, the Players will be played March 14th through 17th in 2019. So get out your green to be on the green on St. Patrick's Day for the final round. The Arnold Palmer Invitational is the week prior. And so the Valspar Championship the week following, that's the open date in March. So that's where the Players will be played next year.
And last but not least, you want to note a couple of local athletes really standing out. Gators swimmer Caleb Dressel and Bulls senior Caitlin Collier.
Yeah, Dressel, the Clay High School alum, a huge weekend at the pool at the NCAA Championships, became the first American man to swim the 50 free in under he broke 18 seconds, rather, broke the record in route to doing that, and also became the first to swim the 100 in under 40 seconds, touching the wall at 39.90. And Caitlin Collier, senior at Bulls, ran the fastest time this year for a high school girl in the 800 meters, winning by more than 8 seconds. She is the only high school runner in the country with two national best times this year. She has the best time in the 800 and in the 600.
Go Caitlin. Oh, and go Bulls. How about that?
Yeah, go Caitlin, but you're not going to catch her if she's going.
Yeah, exactly. You can always follow Cole, though, on Twitter, at Cole Pepper. Good to see you as always, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers and our producer, Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs our board during the hour. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. If you missed anything, our rebroadcast is tonight at 8. 1A's up next. Where is the collateral damage in a trade war? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then, and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.